Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 795, Kritagama. This name already came up 140 names previously. The name previous to this that we discussed was Krita Karma. Krita means has done, karma, work. So what does agama mean? Krita agama means someone who has made agama. Agam is derived from the root gum, to go. Agam, that which has come, just like in Hindi, ajay. It's come, literally means come going. You have to go somewhere to come somewhere. It's just a matter of perspective. Satyadeva Vashishtha gives the derivation agamyate anena iti agamo vedaha. That through which knowledge comes, is obtained, is agama. So agama he identifies with the Veda. So he who created the Veda is Krita Agama. Krita Agamo yena sa Krita Agamaha. Previously, just previous to Krita Karma, we had Indra Karma and Maha Karma. Indra Karma means who does the work of Indra or who inspires the work of Indra, and among other meanings. And Maha Karma means one who does a great work. So it's a great work to make Shastra. Among the many great things that Lord Narayan does to make Shastra, it's greater than Indra can do. Of course, various universal functions are given to various personalities who are imbued with power by the Supreme Lord, the delegated power, and even Brahma can do the secondary creation of the universe. Rudra can enact the destruction of the universe, and Vayu is delegated to control the wind, and Chandra to control the moon, and so on and so on. But the Vedas is such a work that the Supreme Lord does it himself. And then he also manifests it through various rishis, through Brahma, but ultimately everything comes from him, but the Vedas, they come from him specifically, that is stated in Shastra. The point of making the Shastra, we'll come back to that later. The term agama is used in the Vedic tradition to mean Shastra. Also nigam, nigama kalpata or galitam palam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic literature. The term agama is also used to refer to what is considered Shastra, or canonical scripture, by Buddhists and Jains. So there are Buddhist agamas, there are Jain agamas, there are Shaiva agamas. Parashara Bhatta explains the name Kritagama in the context of Lord Buddha deceiving wicked people to make them believe in what he was doing and propounding. The previous name we had, Krita Karma, explained in the context of Lord Buddha, he acted as he preached. So he propounded, Kritagama means that he propounded texts which delineate the system of belief, a network. We heard that, sutantuhu, a network of illusory beliefs. And this applies to the Jains also, Parashrabhata says, Buddha Ahrata Samayaka Agamaha Krita Agamaha, who made the Buddha Agamas, and Arhata refers to the Jains, so who made the Buddhist and Jain scriptures, which are very attractive to the mind if one's mind is not inclined to devotion. There may be people of demoniac, not maybe, there are people of demoniac propensity who are not the kill, destroy, grossly exploit other types, but they are attracted to what might seem to be a sattvic kind of avoidance of Krishna. They're spiritual, but not religious spirit. And yes, Buddhism denies that it's a religion, although it has many of the trappings of religion, but it is distinctly atheistic, even though Mahayana Buddhism, and in its various strains, does have a strong overlay of what appears very much to be theistic. But ultimately, every Buddhist will deny that there is any God or anything at all. Well, that's a generalization. No God for sure, but anything, yes, they accept it exists, but it doesn't really exist because it doesn't really exist because it's only momentary, everything's only momentary, each moment is different from the one before it, and so they have some very, very funny ideas, and these are in the Agamas, the Buddhist Agamas and the Jain Agamas, which very similar in some ways, Buddhism and Jainism, and very different in other ways. I may not get into discussing Jainism so much. It's not a very prominent religious or cultural force in the world today. Basically, it is atheistic. It rejects the Vedas, specifically offensive to Krishna. Inasmuch as in Jain belief, Krishna performs sinful activities for which he's presently suffering in hell. Hare Krishna. But it's a strange mix. It's a real Kali Yuga mix because the Jains, they're very much into cow protection. And if they're actually Jains, they're fanatically against any kind of violence whatsoever, which is not a very practical philosophy, and therefore they don't eat things which grow underground, such as bulbs and tubers and roots, potatoes, things like that. Although they do use cars, which are made from things which are mined from the earth, and oil, which runs them. And Jains are very big, even in Europe, in Antwerp, in the diamond industry, which also means the diamonds have to be extracted from the earth. And there's so many hypocrisies in. That's why the Vedic religion is very practical. It recognizes that you can't be perfect in this world, but you have to try to be as perfect as you can. And rules and regulations are given to regulate people's tendency toward imperfection so they can come to the platform of perfection. But the Buddhist Agamas, let's get back to the point. The Buddhist and Jain Agamas, they're very attractive to the mind. Not to my mind, but to definitely to some people's mind. They're very extremely intellectual. Buddhist philosophy. Well, if we say what's called Indian philosophy in general, it's very, very intellectual. Buddhism, such a study of the psychological workings. But as I say, it's in the Shad Darshans, the Vedic Darshans also, the nature of cause and effect. I mean, really, really, really. And there, in the Mayavad, there's Satkaryavad, and then there's generations of back and forward. Is the cause in the effect, or is the effect in the cause? Are they're completely different? Kaka talianyai, the crow lands on the palm tree, on the branch, at exactly the moment it lands, the palm fruit drops down, and then two pundits who see this are arguing, was it because the crow landed on the branch, or was it just coincidence that the palm fruit was going to drop at the same time? It's impossible to ascertain. So the moral of this story is, don't get too much involved in so much discussion of all these things. It can distract us. Can distract us from the real goal of life. If you want to get into philosophy, you have to start with epistemology, and you can just get caught up in epistemology and never get out of that rabbit hole. But that's only a tool to help us go further. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent as usual. So this name Kritagama means that the Buddha, he made these different texts. Although actually, historically speaking, he didn't, because the Buddhist texts, they were not committed to writing until some centuries after the demise of Gautam Buddha. And the Jain Agamas, and the Buddhist Agamas, they're derived from oral tradition. And there is some dispute over what is Buddha Vachan. The Buddhist Agamas, they're supposed to be based on Buddha Vachan, what Buddha is said to have said. And for all its many branches, Buddhism does have some basic principles of understanding. So it can be said with some surety that Buddha did say certain things. The discussion of dukkha and the cause of dukkha, that this world is full of dukkha, the cause of dukkha is desire, and so this is the very basic beginning of his teachings. So although Lord Buddha didn't directly write these agamas, but his teachings are the basis of them. A meaning given by Shankaracharya and others, Shankaracharya, of course, being a very huge figure in Vedic, in the history of Vedic culture and dharma in this Kali Yuga. He gives the meaning of the name Kritagama as he who made the Vedas, or specifically, Krito Vedatmaka Agamo Yena Iti Kritagamaha. Because when we say Veda, we refer to Rig, Sama, Yajur, Atharva Veda. But then Shankara quotes from Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad, which is part of the Vedas, to establish that the Vedas are not just the Vedas, or rather what can be called Agama is not just, if we say Agama in this sense, it's the broader Vedic knowledge, or the corpus of what we now call Vedic literature, although of course originally it's not written. We tend to think that writing is something of very intelligent people. They write and they read books. But actually, writing is for less intelligent people. because previously people would learn by hearing and remembering. Anyway, I'm quoting from, as Shankara quotes from Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad, on how he who propounded the Vedas, that might be a better term, but actually the term is made here, and I'll have to discuss that, or he propounded the Agama. So, quoting from Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad, Asya Mahato Bhutasya Nishvasita Metad Yad Rigveda Yajurvedaha Samaveda Tarvangirasaha Itihasa Puranam Vidya Upanishadaha Shlokaha Sutranyanuvakyani Yasyai Vaitani Sarvani Nishvasitani. From the breathing of the Mahat, which means Narayan. Shankara accepts this. This is Vishnu Sahasranama. From the breathing out of the Mahat, the Purush, Narayana, came the Rigveda, the Yajurveda, the Samaveda, Atharvangirasa, or in short, Atharvaveda, Itihasa. Itihasa generally refers to Ramayana and Mahabharata. When you say, well, Ramayana was made by Valmiki, wasn't it? And then Mahabharata, that came much later, that was written by Vedvyas. Ramayana, Valmiki, yes. Sri Madhvacharya says that there is a Mool Ramayana, which is much vaster than the Ramayana of Valmiki, which is extended in the world today. Itihasa Puranam, the Puranas, the Vidyas, they're the various Vedic Vidyas, and the, there are so many, Natya Shastra, Niti Shastra, Artha Shastra, the Upanishads, various shlokas, the various sutras, there are various sutras which are given by various rishis, Patanjali Yoga Sutras, there are the Dharma Sutras, Karma Sutras, it's all part of the Vedic corpus, Anuvakyanani, and their explanations. They all came with the breathing of the Purush, which means to say that even though later, in later periods of time, or they become manifested in various periods of time, the various commentaries, anuvakyanani, that means the commentaries on Shastra and the sub-commentaries on Shastra. Just like we have Srimad Bhagavatam and the accepted prime commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam in this Kali Yuga, accepted by all traditional scholars of Bhagavatam, whichever school they may be of, is Sridhar Swami. But then others, so many commentators came later, and they didn't directly comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam, but they would do so by referring to the commentaries of Sridhar Swami. So however Sridhar Swami explained, they would further explain, or sometimes they might even give another angle altogether. Vallabhacharya was distinct in this regard, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wasn't very pleased with that, inasmuch as he wanted to give a completely fresh commentary without touching the commentary of Sridhar at all. But that's the general system, that there's the prime commentator, and then there are sub-commentators. Vyasa, he made the Sutrani, Vedanta Sutras. I mentioned various sutras, Vedanta Sutras. And then Vyasa himself commented on that in his Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he made his Amnai Sutra, Tattva Sutra. And then he again made his own commentary on that to explain it further. So what does that mean? This all comes, all these, it all comes with the breathing of the Purush. And what does that mean? It is, yes, it's already there. When rishis, they manifest various Vedic teachings. They are mantra drashta. That is the original meaning of the rishi, the term rishi. They see, so to speak, the Vedic mantras and they manifest them. So similarly, when those who are following the Vedic line, they give commentaries. It's not that they're giving anything new. It's because Veda is eternal and their commentary is expounding on Veda, which is eternal, and what they're doing, it's already been done. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes so many novel commentaries, we may say, or unique commentaries, but it's not new. Nothing is new. Nothing is new. It's all come before in various cycles of time. And it's manifest with the breathing of the Purush, and then that it's floating in the ether, so to speak. And from time to time, the Lord who is within the heart, sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtaha, matasmriti gyanam apohanam cha, he from whom knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness comes, he manifests that within the heart of various great personalities who then distribute that to others. So the Vedas are apaurushayatva, means that they're not written by anyone, but they come from the Purusha, Narayana. They're apaurushayatva in the sense that they're not written by anyone because they're eternally coexistent with the Supreme Lord, with the jivas also, who are also eternal. But they are manifested through the Purush. So when we say kritagama, we should understand carefully that it's not some... When we say he made the Shastra, it doesn't mean that he, like some imaginative novelist making up some story. It's not like that. It's not fairy tales. We have in the Bhagavatam, Yamuduta Uchuhu, Veda Pranahito Dharmo Hyadharmas Tad Viparyayaha, Veda Narayana Sakshat Svayambhur Iti Sushruma. The Yamadutas, speaking to the Vishnu Dutas, replied to the Vishnu Dutas, who had challenged the Yamadutas, that you're talking about dharma. Okay, tell us what dharma is all about. You say it's dharma to take away the soul of this Ajamil, but can you tell what dharma is? So the Yamadutas replied, this is Srila Prabhupada's translation. The Yamadutas replied, that which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes dharma, the religious principles, and the opposite of that is irreligion. The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, and are self-born. This we have heard from Yamaraja, Vedo Narayana Sakshat. The Vedas are directly Narayana, or it can be understood to mean that they manifest directly from Narayana. Now, in one very important way, Vishnu is Kritagama. He actually can be said to have made the Agama or the scriptures, because in his avatar as Vedavyas, he made them into writing. As well, the Vedas, the Brahma Sutras, the Mahabharata, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and all the other Puranas, they were done by him. They were made by him in the sense that he got them put in writing. They are apaurushaya, the Vedas, But Vedas, they were sorted out, edited, classified. So in that way, he can be called Kritagama, Vedavyas. It's interesting that he gave himself, Vyasadeva gave the shastras, including the misleading shastras, as part of the Vedic system. There are shastras which encourage people in what is ultimately a wrong path, and Lord Krishna deals a lot with that in Bhagavad Gita, talking about the Veda Vada Rataha, the persons who are attached to the words of the Vedas without seeing the higher purpose behind them. They think that going to the heavenly planets is all in all. That is the Purva Mimamsa, that the understanding that all this talk about renunciation, that's not the message of the Vedas. The real message is just do what the Vedas tell you and go to heaven. So Vyas himself gave the shastras, which in one sense are intended to mislead. They mislead people so to lead them onto the right path. You could compare it to something like the government has programs for helping people to be cured of heroin addiction, in which they give the heroin to the addicts, but they give it to them in a regulated and ordered way so that they may gradually reduce the dose and come off of that altogether, and at this reduce the dose, and at the same time as they become sufficiently, their brain becomes sufficiently defuddled so they can understand, they'll tell them and train them in such a way that they can come to their normal condition of life. So in the same way, the Vedas, they offer people activities which are not in their own best interest, ultimately, but because they're so much addicted to that which is not in their best interest, the Vedas give them karma kanda, fruitive work, and the idea is to gradually reform them by giving them knowledge and ultimately the supreme goal of life, to surrender to Krishna. So Vyas himself gave the misleading shastras, but then he corrected himself in the Vedanta Sutras. He specifically in the Vedanta Sutras specifically rebutted various misinterpretations of the Vedas and misunderstandings, and especially after being chastised by Narada, Vyasa compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam to give the clear understanding, Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic knowledge. Now, another meaning that is given is of Kritagama, who made the Agama. He who gave the Pancharatra. This meaning is given by one commentator, Krishna Datta Bharadvaj. The Pancharatra, the huge corpus of Pancharatra texts, many of them are specifically referred to as agamas. Now, those of us who read Srila Prabhupada's books are very much aware of the term Pancharatra. Specifically Narada Pancharatra. But what is Pancharatra? We don't know so much about it, so I'll give a little overview of it here now. Krishnadatta Bharadvaj explains, Pancharatrasya Kritsnasya Karta Narayana Swayam. The Pancharatra literature was originated by Narayanam himself. He made it. Who? Kritsnasya. Kritsnasya, not Krishna, Kritsna. Kritsnasya, who has made is Narayana. Narayana himself spoke the Pancharatra, and other exalted personalities like Narada and also speak certain Pancharatras. There are various scriptures, shastras, which are called Pancharatra, which describes, it's all the Pancharatras are clearly, unambiguously focused on their only subject matter is the worship of Lord Hari. There's no discussion of any temporary material enjoyment or merging into the impersonal Brahman, no such thing. They're very much Vaishnava texts. We find in Mahabharata, it is stated, in the Shantipava, Moksha Dharma, guess who's speaking? Who's speaking Vishnu Sahasranama? Pancharatrasya Kritsnasya Vaktatu Bhagavan Swayam Yathagamam Yathanyayam Nishtha Narayana Prabhu. The Pancharatra system is given by Lord Narayana himself. He is the speaker of the Pancharatra. The purpose of this system, as well as other Vedic literature, is that one will be able to have firm faith in Lord Narayana. Evam ekam sankhya yogam vedaranyakam evacha parasparangani etani pancharatras tu katyate. The Sankhya Yoga system, the mystic yoga system, the Ashtanga Yoga system, the teachings of the Upanishads, the Pancharatra system, they're all said to be one because their aim is one. They're all parasparanganani. They're all limbs of each other. They're all related. Now, Shankaracharya, Adi Shankara, and others following him attacked the whole system of Pancharatra and said it's all bogus. The Pancharatra, as we will hear, it's identified with Veda. It's Vedic. But Shankara said no, because Pancharatra is clearly, specifically Vaishnava. It does not uphold the monism of Shankara, the Advaita Vedanta. Well, the great heroes of Pancharatra, upholding the Pancharatra, are the followers of the Vishishtadvaita system, which later became known as Vishishtadvaita, but the qualified monism. But Shankara, he didn't like this at all. So he attacked this, and he said, no, Pancharatra is not Vedic. It's just something which was made up. He didn't like it. He specifically attacks the idea that of the Chaturvyuha, that there is Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. He says, well, if you say Vasudev is supreme, then how can there be more than, how can he split up into four? How can it be more than one? Because Shankara himself comments on this Vishnu Sahasranama, in which one of the names is Chaturvyuha, Chaturmurti, Chaturvyuha, Chaturatma. So, but he very strongly attached that. You attack that. We can find in Srila Prabhupada's Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila commentary, based on the commentary, the Anubhasha of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, or is it Amrita Pravaha Bhasha of Bhakti? I believe it's Anubhasha. It's a summary, but it goes into some detail of the technicalities of the discussion, whereby the repudiation of the validity of Pancharatra by Shankara is repudiated by the Vaishnava Acharyas. Specifically, Yamuna Acharya in his Agamaniya Pramanam. Agama, Agamaniya, in relation to agama and pramanam. He specifically took up the challenge. Yamuna Acharya, the guru, or one of the gurus of Ramanuja, or the Acharya who passed away just before Ramanuja came to see him. That's another whole story in itself. So he took up the challenge of establishing pramana, evidence for the validity of Pancharatra, and later on in the same sampradaya, Vedanta Deshika took the arguments further, because what happens in Vedic dialectics, that someone writes a refutation, someone writes something, someone refutes it, and then from the original school that's being refuted, they write a counter-refutation, and it goes backwards and forwards in writing. It can go on over centuries, and that has been going on. It's not going on now. The same arguments of previous acharyas are being rehashed again and again and again, but that would go on for centuries, how the different scholars of mostly it was Advaita versus the various Vaishnava schools. So they go, so Vedanta Deshika, some generations later, replied to the objections to Yamuna Acharya's Agamaniya Pramanam. Vedanta Deshika composes Pancharatra Raksha, which means the protection of Pancharatra. And he established that those who, in their zeal to uphold the Vedas, we're following the Vedas, we reject the Pancharatra, it's nothing to do with the Vedas, but you may call yourself a great follower of the Vedas, Vedanta Deshika establishes, but if you don't accept the Pancharatra as being interwoven with, indispensable to, inseparable from the Vedas, as being part of the Vedic corpus, if you don't accept this, Vedanta Deshika says, it's blasphemy of the Vedas, just like it's this, to the same extent as those who worship demigods on an equal or independent platform to that of Lord Vishnu. It's demoniac. Okay, all right, we're going back a few centuries here, but right now, right up to the present day, many or most of the famous temples of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they perform their rituals according to various Pancharatra agamas. Some of them do so according to Vaikarnasa, which is another Vedic system, which in many ways is very similar to Pancharatra. Anyway, we're discussing Pancharatra here. The Ishvara Samhita, which is one of the important Pancharatras still being used in temple worship today, states that there was an original Pancharatra Veda known as the Ekayana Veda, which was absolutely straightforwardly non-ambiguously theistic. Now, of course, Madhvacharya especially will say, well, all the Vedas are like that. There's no room for any Advaita interpretation whatsoever. But Ishvara Samhita makes the point that Veda is one, and that is the original source of Pancharatra, the Vedas, and that is accepted by all Vedic scholars, traditional Vedic scholars. They all accept that in Kali Yuga we don't have access here on this planet to all the Vedas anyway, because many of them, they're just not present in the world in this Kali Yuga. Veda is much more vast than what we have access to. Traditionally, 108 Pancharatra texts are referred to, but There are many more Pancharatras extant, most of which have not been translated and are not, they're extant in written form, but they're not used in the sense they're not followed by any particular school or any particular temple. And they're quite similar. The Pancharatras are similar. The pioneer of study of the Pancharatra texts in English was Otto Schrader, very German name, and he traced 240 works. What does the name Pancharatra mean? Well, there are various explanations of that. In the Shatapatha Brahmana of the Shukla Yajurveda, the Purusha, who is understood to be Narayana, he contemplated performing yajna sacrifices for 5 nights to establish his superiority over all other beings. To establish means he's already supreme, but just so people get an idea of it. And so in that text, the term is used, Pancharatra. The Ishvara Samhita says that the philosophy of this system was expounded by Vishnu originally to 5 rishis. And this is accepted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll get back to that later. Shandilya, Opakayana, Monjayana, Kaushik, and Bharadvaj. And they, in turn, taught what they were taught to their disciples on 5 different nights. So pancha means 5 and ratra means night. So 5 nights. It's also suggested that Vishnu imparted this knowledge originally in its various branches to Ananta, Garuda, Vishvaksena, Brahma, and Rudra. So he taught them, he taught 5 different sages of 5 different personalities, different branches of the Pancharatra knowledge. The Prashna Samhita, which is another Agama, and the Padma Tantra, which is another Agama Shastra, say that Pancharatra Ratra can mean cooking. So it's for the cooking of 5 non-orthodox systems, namely Sankhya, atheistic yoga, Buddhism, Jainism, and the Pashupata cult. Pashupata cult was at one time a prominent Shaiva cult. The Narada Pancharatra states that the name Pancharatra refers to 5 branches of knowledge, namely Tattva, the essence, the ontology of everything, Mukti Prada, that which gives liberation, Bhakti Prada, that which gives devotion, Yoga, the systems of spirit, the methodology of spiritual practice and discipline and meditation and worship, and Vaisheshiya, other considerations, that which is seen, touched, tasted, smelled, heard, felt, thought of. Another suggestion for the meaning of Pancharatra is that it refers to the 5 aspects of Godhead, which are very much emphasized in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. Paravasudev, the supreme topmost manifestation of the Supreme Lord in the Supreme World. Vyuhas, that means Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, as they manifest in separated forms, vibhav avatars, or the various avatars who appear in this world, Ram, Narsingha, Varaha, Kurama, and they would include in that Krishna also. The archa, the form of the Lord is the deity, and antaryami, the indweller, the Supreme Lord, Paramatma dwelling in the heart, hridyeshe juna tishtati, residing in the heart of every living being. More explanations. Markandeya Sanghita says that Lord Narayan narrated to Brahma over a period of five nights. Well, that's a similar to one. That's why it's called Pancharatra. So these are various ideas. Pushkara Sanghita says that whatever benefit you get through the Vedas, Vedanta, Puranas, Sankhya, and Yoga Shastra, these five systems, you get easily through Pancharatra. So it's called Pancharatra. Prashna Sanghita says, Ratra denotes darkness, night, ajnana, and Pancha denotes that which destroys that darkness. Yet another meaning. Ratra means gyan. We just heard how Ratra can mean ajnana, but here, another explanation of what Pancharatra means. Gyan, knowledge, is of five types, which is called Artha Panchakam. Very important small work by Sri Ramanuja called Artha Panchakam was collected by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and translated into Bengali. These five topics are dealt with in the Pancharatra texts. The five branches of knowledge are Bhagavat Swarup, the nature and the identity of the Supreme Lord, Jiva Swarup, the identity and nature of the Jiva, the means for the Jiva to reach the Supreme Lord, the obstacles in the path, and Purushartham, what is gained by practicing devotional service, surrendering to the Supreme Lord, and reaching Him. So, whatever derivation we may take, the Pancharatra literature, it very much emphasizes devotion, surrender to Narayan as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as a consequence of which the Supreme Lord accepts the devotee and grants him liberation. It gives knowledge of the nature of the Supreme Lord and His creation, and then liberation, which is clearly delineated as not the idea of liberation of the monists, but attainment of the soul's inherent state of bliss in service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Going back to going to Vaikuntha. That is the essence of the Agama teaching. Within the Agamas, the Pancharatra literature, there are all kinds of matters relevant to theistic belief and a lot of information on worship, making temples, systems of worship, the behavior of the worshippers, daily rites, household duties, and philosophy also, but a lot of stuff on practical things, mantras and yantras, festivals, how festivals should be observed, and it's a huge literature. Devotion devotion, devotion. It's all about devotion, surrender to the Supreme Lord as being itself the goal and the best path for everyone, and there's no need to do anything else. And that it's open to everyone, regardless of their background. It is the fulfillment of all Vedic practices, and if we follow this, there's no need to follow so many different Vedic practices. So the Pancharatra, that is, it's still the central. It will always be. It's inseparable from the lives and activities of the Vaishnavas of various sampradayas. Gauriyas, as we know, we especially follow Narada Pancharatra. We hear again about this quoted again and again and again in Srila Prabhupada's books. Narada Pancharatra is a collection of Sanghitas, which we may roughly say is like essays compiled by the sages to whom the Supreme Lord spoke this knowledge of Pancharatra. Again, I'll say Shandilya, Upagayana, Monjayana, Kaushik, Bharadvaj. So under the direction of Narada, these five sages, they compiled the Narada Pancharatra. In his Navadip Dhamma Mahatmya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that this Narada Pancharatra appeared in Navadvip Dham. It was manifested in Navadvip Dham, in Vidyanagar, in the part of Navadvip Dham called Vidyanagar. One major point in the Pancharatra literature, one major point in the Pancharatra literature, or the whole Pancharatra religion, if you like, is that although it is in essence Vedic, it stems from the Vedas. It is knowledge. Veda means knowledge. But the Vedic system is a gradual process of development, as discussed in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. By following the Daiva Varnashram system, that people can gradually, birth after birth, be elevated. But then Lord Krishna also states in Bhagavad Gita, Mam hi partavya parshritya, yepi syuv papa yoneha, sriyo vaishyas tata shudras, tepi yanti param gatim. King puna brahmana punya, bhakta rajarshayas tata, anityam asukam lokam, Imam Prapya Bhajasva Mam. So Krishna in these two verses states that, well, it's expected that the higher castes, the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, the pious, most pious among them, will worship me in this miserable temporary material world and attain me. But Krishna says that even those of sinful birth, lower birth means it's due to more sinful activities, women, Vaishyas and Shudras, if they take shelter in me, they can attain me. So this is the Pancharatra system. There's the Vedic system, which Krishna outlines in, especially in chapter 5, practically in the beginning of the first 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna alludes a lot and continues with that later in the Gita, but especially in the first chapters, he talks about sarvakama akilam parata gyane parisamiyate, that how one has to perform niyatang kuru karmani, always do your karma, and that will lead to jnana. But then Krishna gives the essence of jnana in the middle 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, which maya sakta, in these This is the middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. It begins with the words Maya Saktamanav Partha, that there are various processes performing your karma, but Maya Saktamanav Partha Yogam Yunjamada Ashrayaha. Now we're going to jump up to another level here, Krishna says. With mind attached to me, you perform work for me. And then Maya Sara Asangshayang Samagramang Yatagya Sisi Tachrino. How you can do this in such a way, being fully attached to me. So Krishna gives this knowledge in the middle of the six chapters of the Gita, which specifically deal with bhakti yoga. Otherwise, the Vedic system is following the Varnashram system. In the Varnashram system, one's eligibility is considered, and then one has to act according to that eligibility. Brahmanas can perform temple worship, others cannot. Worship at home, others can do. Brahmanas can perform yajnas, others cannot. But then we have in Srimad Bhagavatam that anyone who surrenders to Krishna, and many we'll find in the Agama Shastra, so many statements, how even if someone is born in a lower birth by his previous sinful activities, is on a more exalted platform than persons of a higher birth, persons of a lower birth, if they worship Krishna, are on a higher platform, they're on the best platform than someone on a higher birth who doesn't worship Krishna. And this is the essence of the Pancharatra system, that one can leapfrog, one can jump over all the slow, gradual Vedic Varnashram system and immediately surrender to Krishna. Whatever one's previous situation is, one can be very sinful and cross over all these things. That's why in Krishna consciousness, Varnashram is not required. One can simply surrender to Krishna. But then again, our acharyas have emphasized that Varnashram is required because we try to surrender, but we have so many contaminations and we need Varnashram to Daiva Varnashram, that which is clearly focused on Krishna consciousness. We need that to stabilize ourselves, and we need some social system to work. And if we don't live in Krishna, in the social system given by Krishna, then we're going to have to go to something which is not focused on Krishna, and it's going to be man-made, and we're going to be fighting forever, as we see in the present demoniac world. The present world is ruled by pravritting cha nivritting cha janana vidura suraha, people fighting over what is right, what is not right, should be right wing, left wing, communist, fascist, capitalist, corporatocracy. There are so many different ideas. Well, corporatocracy is not an idea, it's a subtle takeover, isn't it? Not so subtle, maybe. So many different ideas will come, but they're all based on ignorance of the proper purpose of life, and so they're all demoniac. So, we follow Pancharatra to worship the Lord, knowing that spiritually we can advance immediately to the highest level, whatever our social status is, but at the same time, as long as we are materially conditioned, we have to take cognizance of our material conditioning, and Varnashram Dharma helps us to do that. Simply by surrendering this to the Supreme Lord, Prapati Marga, the goal is reached. But Pancharatra, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have rules. It has many, many, many rules to follow. But they're different to the rules of, or the understanding within the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. In Pancharatra, there are fire sacrifices, as there are in Karmakanda. It's a very important part of Vedic culture. Nowadays, we, especially Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we emphasize on the sacrifice of chanting the holy names. But the rigid followers of the Pancharatra system, especially in South India, they emphasize a lot on performance of fire sacrifices. And they emphasize very much on the essence of Pancharatra, that even if one is bereft of any pious activities due to being so sinful previously, somehow or other, by the mercy of a Vaishnava, if he gets the idea to surrender to the Supreme Lord, he can do so immediately. So they're open to initiate all kinds of people, and even animals they may do. Sometimes some animals have been initiated. The elephants, temple elephants, they get initiation. I'm not sure exactly how that works, because how the animal thinks of surrendering to the Supreme Lord, although the temple elephants are engaged in, and we see some of them, they're very anxious to carry the Supreme. That's the major function of temple elephants, to participate in festivals where the Supreme Lord comes out in his deity form out of the temple. And they like to, you can see they understand what's going on in the festival. They like to participate in that. The only qualification to accept the prapatti yoga, the linking with the Supreme Lord by surrender according to the Pancharatrik system, is Mahavishvas, great faith in the process of Sharanagati. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam, rakshishyatiti vishvaso, guptritve varanang tata, atmanikshepa karpanye shadvidha sharanagati. This was previously well known. This verse was well known previously in learned circles in India. There were so many things which were well known. Anyway, what are they? To accept only activities which are favorable for pleasing the Supreme Lord Narayana, rejecting all other activities, having great faith that he is our protector and our maintainer, being extremely humble, considering oneself completely dependent on the Supreme Lord, and completely surrendering, throwing oneself at him. So this is a summary of the Pancharatra's very, very brief summary. It's a huge, huge topic which I've had a look at. I can't say by any means that I'm anything like an expert, but I've had a little look at it, and I thought I'd speak on this as a matter of a little information as we're discussing this name, Kritagama, he who made the Shastra, which the Acharyas link with, among other things, the Pancharatra Shastra. There's more to say on this name, Kritagama. Krishna willing, I'll speak more on this in another session. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas chakripa sindhubhya evacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya churnakang padayo nipatya kritvacha kaku shatameta daham ravimi. Hey, sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat goranga chandra charane kurutanu raga ha. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mokarona vayang vichara yamaha. Hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilotama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.